Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of mountain biking. If you've been listening for a while, then welcome back, and thanks as ever for your support. If you're a new listener, then welcome on board, and we really hope you enjoy what we're doing. If you haven't listened to us before, check out our past episodes on our website, downtimepodcast.com. We've got all kinds of interviews with people like Greg Minnar, Aaron Gwynn, Tani Seagrave, Katie Winton, and much, much more. So head over there and have a look. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast so that you get all of our future episodes. You can do that at downtimepodcast.com/subscribe. All right, well, we've got a pretty amazing guest for you this week, and it's Josh Briceland. I don't think Josh really needs an introduction. I've wanted to have him on the podcast for a long time, so when I finally managed to get in touch and he invited me to come over and join him on his houseboat, I jumped at the chance. We sit back, have a cup of tea, and talk about childhood, riding with PT, being on the syndicate, the real reasons why he left the downhill scene, where he's heading now, and much, much more. So, without further ado, here's Josh Briceland. Josh Briceland, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me on, mate.
Good stuff. So, this is pretty exciting. One of the few podcasts that I've done face-to-face, which is always better. And we're sat on your houseboat somewhere near Manchester, which is awesome, like totally cool and a very, very different spot. Like, how did this come about? How did you end up living on a houseboat? Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, well, it's sort of boats stem back as far as bikes for me, if not further. I sort of grew up in and around boats. Mum and dad made a living from initially just buying knackered ones, doing them up a bit and selling them, and then slowly built that into a business. And once dad had built 100 boats, he sold a business and bought the marina, which is where we are now. Yeah. And this boat we're on is one of the boats he built about 15 years ago for Andy Kiffin.
Oh, so it was Pete's mechanic.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's in my blood, really, my boats, and just super tranquil. It's like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I felt that when I got here, just like stepping out of the car, having driven through the outskirts of Manchester, pretty crazy traffic, and in here it's so quiet. And
yeah, super it's away chill. From it all. It's nice. Just hear the ducks and the geese.
Yeah.
And,
happy days. How long have you been in the boat now then?
I think it's got to be coming up for 4 years.
Yeah.
I don't even remember. 14. Yeah. I think it was the summer of 14 I went on it.
Could you ever see yourself living in bricks and mortar after being here? Like,
yeah, I could. Yeah. And I sort of split my time between here and my girlfriend's house. But yeah. I just usually, like, there's a water tank and I'm 3 hoses away from a water point. So I'm super minimalist on my water use here. So I won't shower on my boat. So, like,
fair play.
I just like go and use my mum's or Jessie's house for a shower, and that's me. So, but houses have their uses.
Nice. I see where you're coming from. Good stuff. And what else, like, outside of riding, I've not seen much of what you get up to. So what is Josh up to when he's not riding a bike these days? Seen a bit of car and motorbike stuff.
Yeah, but I usually try and have a hobby which isn't mountain biking.
Right.
For a little while there, it was drifting, which I do miss.
Yeah.
I've got a rear-wheel drive car and I love just kicking the clutch.
Cheeky drifting. Yeah.
But, like, just for me, it was with my travelling and racing, I burn enough fossil fuels anyway. Right. And I was like, I just couldn't really justify it. So, not that I'm preaching, that's just me. And, so drifting took a backseat. Yeah. And then I was skating for a little bit, but ankles and skateboards, and that's just a recipe for disaster. So, I did a bit of skating. And then BMX, really. BMX and yoga now.
Yeah.
Try and do at least once a week yoga.
Yeah.
I absolutely buzz off yoga. I've never felt like, ever riding after yoga, I've never felt so relaxed and just fluid on the bike. So
interesting.
I think that's, yeah.
What sort of yoga do you do? Because there's a load of different styles.
So many, isn't there? Yeah. I'm not that up on them all, but the one I go to weekly is Iyengar.
Okay.
Which is like pretty strict form based and like repeating poses a lot, which is mint for me because I'm stiff as a board and useless.
Yeah, riding does that to you.
Yeah, big sure. time. Yeah. Years of it. And I never really stretched before. Like, when I was younger, I wasn't flexible, so I didn't stretch. So it just got worse and worse.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I got to the point where I couldn't touch my toes and then thought, yeah. I've got to do something about this. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Do you get like a... Is there a sort of mindfulness, like the mental side of yoga as well? Do you feel that too, or is it more just about
massively,
the body?
Massively. I love the feeling when I leave. It's just like still, it's nice. It's not crazy thoughts running around. Just like body and mind relaxed. Yeah, it's good.
And you find that transfers to a good riding session then?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, you're just in balance, aren't you? Way more in balance and just ready to drop into flow zone.
Sweet. Sounds good. Nice one. So let's wind the clock back a little bit. You mentioned, you know, your family was involved in boats and stuff when you were growing up. Tell us a little bit about, like, your childhood. Where were you based? What was it like?
Yeah, well, right here, really. In my boatyard over Wave, We lived in the boatyard in a boat for a few years, and then in a caravan just next to the boat. So I think Dad had sold the boat we were living on, and then Dad bought the house opposite. But the boatyard was like raised, and the road runs down next to it, so it was like a little bank.
Yeah.
And as far back as I can remember, I was riding down the bank to the road. It was like a 5-second run.
Nice.
And I have so many little ways down. And my dad used to love riding motorbikes. So he was big into his motorbikes. And he'd do a bit of push biking for training. And I'd just pedal around making motorbike noises. But ended up just riding push bikes.
Yeah.
As soon as I got home from school, I'd be on my push bike. And then that was it. Loved it, always.
Sweet. I read somewhere about your dad, like, turning his motorbike around and creating a bit of a rut somewhere that you were sessioning as a kid.
Yeah, totally.
Nice.
There used to be a rut at the bottom of the drive, and I'd try and, like, it was a 180, and it'd come back out uphill, and I'd just try and go in as fast as I could so I could come back up with a bit of speed, and I'd never make it round.
Sweet. But... bar dragging it. What kind of age were you?
5 or 6, probably. So.
Nice.
Long time ago.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And that, like, how did that progress then into, like, getting to races and that side of things?
I think Andy Kiffin really was probably a huge influence, because he was sort of good mates with my old man, and obviously he was Peter's mechanic at the time.
Yeah.
And Dad. Yeah, it's funny looking back. It's you're a product of your environment, aren't you?
Yeah, for sure.
And like racing has always been, Dad used to race motorbikes and Kiffo mechanics for racing. And I think that's how we ended up. We go on Sunday rides, and then we'd always do a Sunday ride. I think when I was like 10 or 11, I got my first mountain bike, which was a GT Outpost Trail or something. With RST, some horrendous form.
Yeah, they didn't work back then, did they?
No. And the Sunday ride, the Saturday or Sunday ride progressed into, why don't we go and try a race? We went to a Pierce race at Bringewood or Hopton, I can't remember which one.
Yeah.
And you had to be 12 to enter, and I was 10. Dad just changed my birthday.
Nice.
And a race. So I did like 4 years in juvenile. So I did one race and absolutely loved it. And I remember it was like, I had about 6 crashes, 2 over bars, ball road most of it, but just absolutely loved it. The run down Bringewood took me about 10 minutes, nice. But that was us. And, so prior to that, I was racing motocross.
Okay.
My old man had raced motocross every weekend, so he'd take me and I'd race motocross. But then we did like one mountain bike race, and then we'd balance both, and then... Later, like, you as got a bit faster and went into youth and junior, Dad pretty much traded out motocrossing for just taking me around, and absolute legend. Just
fair play.
Yeah, committed, fully committed to me, and was
were you getting results at that point? Like, could he see there was a potential? Or was it just because you were loving it and he was your, like, your dad kind of thing?
I did know. I think I was getting all right results, and I think there was definitely mention of potential, but I don't know how I saw it. But I can't remember when my first good result was. I think I had a second to Brendan. Yeah, I had a second to Brendan, and I wasn't even in his category, so I must have still been too young.
Sweet. So, yeah, because he's a couple of years older, right?
Yeah. At Radnor, maybe. And then I think when, something like that.
Fair play. It's going back a while, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a long time. And I used to hit my head so much. My memory's terrible when I was that age. I'd never put my arms out. It'd always be straight to
your head.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And then, how did Petey get involved? So obviously there's the link through Andy Kiffin, right? But when did Petey first kind of see you ride? Or
I went to a MVUK photo shoot in Warncliffe, and I'd never been Warncliffe before. And Kiffo took me over. I had a day off school, and I went over. Sweet. And it was like a masterclass for Pete. He was helping people. Take them to a gnarly, horrible, craggy Warncliffe section and chuck a load of amateurs down it.
Yeah, and Warncliffe back then didn't have, there was no easy trails
up
there, right?
Oh, no, it wasn't sculpted like it is now. It was just raw. So I must have done all right, because Petey sort of, he took me under his wing from there on, really. And he'd always give me tips at races, and eventually, so Kiffo was like my first sponsor through Northwest Mountain Bikes. He'd sort us out with all sorts, and I basically cracked my GT and then got another GT, and then I snapped the elastomer in that fork. and then I got a new fork, and then I cracked that frame, and then I got a full suspension, and then I cracked that.
Good effort.
And then Petey was like, oh, I'm riding Orange now.
Yeah.
Here's an old Patriot. And I think it was like the matte grey front end and the matte black back end. Nice. Little small Orange Patriot. Yeah. And oh man, that was a game changer, that bike. I absolutely loved it. And after about a year on silos, I got some boxes on it.
Sweet.
And then it was like full downhill rig. And I guess that was the first. I think Petey gave us that frame, or maybe he just charged us fuck all for it. But from there on, it was pretty much under Petey's wing.
Yeah. Was that that was before Royal, though, before you were on the Royal team?
Yeah. Then from there on to Royal Orange.
Yeah. And that was with Brendan and
Brendan and Mark. I think Donnie had just left when I got on.
Yeah.
And so had Rich Barlow. But I remember going to them Pierce races when I was younger. Because we used to do a lot of Pierce, because Midlands and that, sort of the closest. Because it was right when, was it Nams?
Yeah, North.
Yeah, they just sort of finished when I started riding, so we didn't really have that. So we go down, either STA or Pierce Cycles. Yeah. Like, so we'd go and do a Pierce Cycles, and I always used to look up to the Royal boys so much. They were just like the coolest guys. I mean, I remember getting on that team. I couldn't believe it, man. It was sick.
Yeah, man, you must have been stoked, especially riding with those two as well. I mean, that's a hell of a crew to have around you.
Big time. Brendan taught me so much. Just inspired me. Brendan would come in and stay for a weekend, or I'd go down to his and jumping mostly.
Right.
I just remember him jumping. There'd be doubles I'd just have been trying my whole life to clear, and he'd barely even pedal and just boost them and whip them. I'd be like, where did that come from?
How'd you
do
that, So did he actually teach you, or was it just an inspiration? Do you know what I mean?
No, just to watch and be like, whoa, that is possible.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing as well, the generational thing now, off on a bit of a tangent, but back then you'd have your DVDs.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, you can't even tell on a video how sick something is. And it's so far out of context, you can't really appreciate it or fully understand it, can you?
Yeah, until you've been there and done it.
But then seeing Brendan actually ride jumps was just I just remember that blowing my mind so much. But then also Mark and Petey at a training day once when I was real young. I remember watching them two come through this real tight section somewhere. I went down and I spoke to Dad and I was like, Dad, I don't know if I ever want to be that fast. It looks so dangerous. watching him, I just couldn't comprehend how quick they were in and out of trees. I was like, that looks mental.
Awesome. That's cool though, to get that inspiration at a young age and like have that to buzz off and push.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Nice. So you kept going and then pushed on. So Brendan, then, while we're on that topic, like fast forward a good chunk of years and you boys are filming for Death Grip in Schladming, which is one of the best things I've ever seen on video and always gets me far too stoked to go and ride my bike. How was it? Like, talk us through that. Was it a couple of days or?
Yeah, I think it was. It was 2 or 3 days. And mate, I was like, to be honest, I was nervous because since that first encounter with Brendan, I've always like looked up to him so much. And some of the riding I've seen him do over the years, man, World Cups.
It's pretty insane.
World Cups in Andorra when it was fresh and raw, and he's just fucking dancing through it like, oh, ridiculous. So, to be honest, I was a little bit nervous because I was like, shit, this fucking guy's following me. I've got to be on my absolute best form.
Yeah, some pressure right there.
And I think it came out real well. I was just like in awe of him whenever I got to see him do a bit. And it was a good time. It was a good time. Schladming's rad. It was a good combo.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, seeing both of you get excited about each other's riding is something that, yeah, we need more of. Like, need more of you boys touring the world, riding the best tracks and
Enjoying it.
Yeah, super good.
That's cool. The thing, isn't it? Not getting away from that enjoyment. It's key.
Yeah. So while we're on video projects, talk about a couple of the other bits and bobs that you've done recently. So Gamble. We saw the premiere of that the other day.
Yeah, yeah.
I think by the time this podcast goes out, it will be just about to drop on iTunes.
Yeah, it's not far off, is
pretty
it?
Close. How was it, you and Craig?
Mint. Fucking mint week. Another one, Craig. Craig's an absolute sick rider and just a really funny lad to be around. And Jobo, I've travelled with Jobo for years. And then it was a good crew as well because it was Chris Seeger there doing a bit of filming.
Okay. Yeah.
And also Mono, obviously.
Yeah.
And I've not worked with Mono before, so that was funny because he's off his fucking box. So it were a good week. And I forgot my axle the day we got there,
shit,
which was such a knobhead move. I couldn't believe it. I was like, opened my bike back and I just had this image of it sat on my toolbox. I was like, I've not even put it in. So I don't even need to look. I know it's not here.
You straight away. Yeah.
And then just having to drive around. So we missed the first day, but we grafted from then on and it was absolutely wicked.
Yeah.
Craig was doing some mad stuff. And there's that one clip where they only showed it once and it goes so quick, but there's loads of like, at that Ponte de Lima, there's loads of natural sort of undulations in the tracks. And one of them was like, you pump one thing. Well, there's like two step downs basically, but sort of fierce knuckles on them. And Craig was pre-opping the lip of a step down and then doubling out, which was really gnarly. And I was following him. And I had to follow super close for helmet cam to look good and all that. And we come into it this one time, and on the pre-op, he slips a pedal and like tags the lip as he goes in. And I'm like pulling up, fully committed, watching him just go down so hard underneath me. And it was just like, my heart, I think, stopped. And I was just in the air like, he's already nailed himself and I'm going to land on him and make it worse. And this is going to be fucking horrible. But he managed to like ragdoll out of the way and I rammed his bike and it was all, he like gashed his hand pretty deep, pretty not nice, but he got away with it and he taped it up and was fired up back riding. So yeah,
good effort. Yeah, I remember seeing that. My heart was in my mouth watching it.
Yeah,
fair play. Both you got away with it.
Something on our side that day. It was gnarly, man. It was crazy.
Good stuff. So let's go roll back then to Pete. He's taking you like under his wing, and you boys used to do like day long road trips up to Innlaithen and stuff, right?
Yeah. So when he was on Orange, wasn't he? Pete's Orange days when he was pretty strong up there. And yeah, he'd just go and batter runs. He'd go and do 12, 13 runs somewhere and just like up at six, fly up to inners, just runs all day. I remember I'd just be so tired. Just like, I'd be tired when we got there. Like, I'd never get up this early. So we'd just ride and ride and ride. And then vomit home, and it was just like typical Petey, that work ethic, just graft, just fucking graft it out. And,
yeah, fair play.
Yeah.
What's it like? Because how old would you have been then? Like early teens or something?
Yeah, 13, 14, 15 maybe.
And how was it like having days out riding with like effectively a hero, I guess?
I'd just be really shy and weird, I think. I'd just be like, oh my God, I'm with Petey. And then he'd try and follow me. I remember it was so hard, he'd like follow me. And I'd just fuck up every turn. I'd be trying so hard, I'd just be making a complete mess. And he'd just be like tyre buzzing me. Riding down the track, just a bit of a tyre buzz, shouting names at me. I'd just be like full panic, just trying to go as fast as I could.
Nice.
But yeah, definitely brought something out in me.
Yeah, well, a good way to get like to push your own pace, I guess, to have something like that hustling you.
So. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, super good.
We'll get back to our chat with Josh in just a second. But first up, just a few quick messages. Please help us keep this podcast free. We've been doing this for a while now, and we started selling some t-shirts over on our website, downtimepodcast.com/shop. Proceeds will go to helping us keep the podcast going and keeping it free for all our listeners. To keep up to date with what we're doing, there's a few things you can do. Head over to social media and search for Downtime Podcast on Instagram or Facebook, or Downtime Tweets on Twitter. Also, make sure you subscribe to the podcast to get all the new episodes delivered to your device, and join our newsletter to keep up to date with what's going on. You can do all of that on downtimepodcast.com/subscribe. Alrighty, back to Josh.
And so it all started to come together, right, through junior ranks, like,
yeah.
Was it 2007-ish, like coming into Fort William, you were probably favourite for junior world champ win. And I heard you were overtraining at that point, which I think a lot of people maybe that know the more chilled out Josh Briceland of today, like overtraining feels, I'm sort of almost surprised, but you were kind of beasting yourself back then, right?
I was a hungry youth, really, and I think at the time, I was 16. My dad was like, you can either work for a living.
Yeah.
Or you can ride bikes. And I'll... Oh, no, no. He was like, I've just made that up. He was like, you can stay in education.
Right.
And I'll sort you out.
Okay.
Or you leave education and you've got to work.
Yeah.
But he was like, if you work for me, I'll let you have a day off a week to ride. So I took that route. And then... Yeah, just really hungry to make a job out of it. And yeah. Racing was, I think physically, I found it tough as a, coming through the age ranks when I was right. up against like Sam Dale,
yeah.
Joe Smith. They were both quite naturally strong lads.
Right.
And I've always been super weedy mm-hmm. and strength something I've really had to work on
right.
to sort of make any inroads. And I think it might have been the beginning of that year or the year before, but Pete had sort of said to me, you want to focus on one event. And I'm Worlds was obviously the junior Worlds was the one, Fort William Home yeah. World Cup. And I just trained as hard as I possibly could, and it was probably like four weeks before World Champs, maybe a bit more. But I've gone out and done a sprint session just up the road here, and I'd already been feeling knackered, and I was like definitely verging on running myself down.
Yeah.
And I went out and did a load of sprints, and my last one just drained me that much. I just like rolled home. Got in bed. I don't think I got out of bed for like 3 days. I was just empty.
Whoa,
and then like, I couldn't train hard for a good few years after that. So I was just like, I'd get keen. I'd like, feel like I was getting stronger. I'd do a race. I'd get levered at the after party. And then I'd just be fucked for ages. Weird. But I'd like some mad like fatigue for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, but it didn't really like, I could still ride good. And I guess it just taught me a bit of balance. And the thing was, I'd always be like trying to train and go and ride and socialise, and I'd be trying to do everything.
Yeah.
So I was just always putting too much on my plate, I think.
That's fair play.
Yeah.
Were you getting any support from the training side at that point? Did you have like a plan, or were you kind of working it all out yourself?
I was sort of working it out myself.
Yeah.
I'd been given tips off here and there. Pete had told me this. Andy Kiffo used to... There was a hill called the Brickworks down the road. And he just used to say, go and pedal up that five times as fast as you can. And I'd be like, all right.
Fair enough.
Do two and come home like, fuck that.
Awesome. Good stuff. So then, was it 08? That was your world junior world's first win, right? Where was that? What venue was that?
Val d'Isol.
Oh, yeah, sweet.
Val d'Isol.
Yeah, so it was clicking.
Yeah, so the weekend after Fort Bill in 07.
Yeah, 07, yeah.
It was Maribor.
Yeah.
And that, I fucking love that track. The terrain there is just wicked.
It looks amazing, yeah.
I remember I had a bit of one on me because I just like... There was a lot of Santa Cruz were at Worlds and there was a lot of people expecting stuff.
Yeah.
I was this young guy and it's always hard when you're young because you feel you've got to prove yourself constantly. And anyway, I went to Maribor the next week and I remember qualifying fourth and I was just like, oh my God, where did that come from?
That was when juniors and elites were combined.
Yeah, that were in the mix. Yeah. So then I like, that was my first ever experience of being at the top of the hill when it goes quiet. When there's not like 20 dudes on turbo trainers, it was just like G over there, Sam over there, someone else, and me. Me with a banana what I'd split in my shorts when I was riding to the start. Just like, what am I doing here?
Awesome. Oh,
funny.
How did you get on at that race?
I think I finished ninth, which I lost some spots from my quali, but I was...
As a junior in that field.
I was made up.
And were you on Syndicate at that time?
No, and that result scored me my deal the following year.
Right. So yeah, tell us a bit about that. How did that all come around?
Basically, I got an offer off Gravity Group, which is who Blenky rode for at the time.
Okay.
Blenky and was it Mitch Dell? No. Oh no, Mitch. Blenky and someone else. Peter, the Polish bloke. Anyway.
Yeah, I can't remember.
They offered me a deal. And then Petey told Roscott. And Roscott basically matched it. So I got $9,000.
Nice.
For 20.
That must have seemed sweet at that
age. Oh, mate. Like... Well, fuck. It was more than I was getting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was absolutely chuffed a bit. And then... Yeah, and then that year, I managed to win World Champs. I'm a World Cup overall again. So I did that twice, but it didn't. Yeah.
And who was on Syndicate when you joined then? So Petey, Minar, was Rennie still on?
Rennie was on it, but me and Minar joined at the same time.
Ah, okay, yeah.
So we were like fresh on.
Yeah.
And then Greg was just like, fucking bullied me.
Did he?
For a year.
Bit harsh.
Oh, so harsh, man. I used to hate his guts.
Really? Like, what sort of stuff was he up to then?
Just anything, mate. Just absolutely anything where he could have a dig at me.
Yeah.
And I guess I was probably a little bit soft and Dad had always looked after me.
Right.
And I'd not been, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd worked for Dad, so I hadn't had that apprenticeship digging yet.
Yeah,
so that were it. So it was good. I don't hold it against him. It's what he felt he needed to do, and it's how it went. So
turned out all right, didn't it?
Yeah.
And how was it riding on the same team as Rennie as well? Right, he was a bit of a legend.
Unbelievable, mate. Rennie, I think I absolutely love that guy. The Rennie. I think the week after I won the World Cup, or a couple of days after, it might have been before Norway. I hadn't heard from him for like 2 years. I hadn't heard from him for ages. And I get a phone call for a number, didn't I? I'm like, hello, I'm laying in bed on my boat. And he's like, how did it feel, mate? I'm like, Renoir! And he nice. Was just buzzing, and he just rang me out of the blue.
Awesome.
But yeah, so like, we'd go on, we'd always, with the Santa Cruz thing, we'd go early in the year, pick up our new bikes.
Yeah.
That was my first trip to California. Going and collected all our team bikes and that. And I remember waiting to go and do some pictures somewhere in a gravel car park, and I was like, trying to do some little cutties, when cutties were like a new cool thing, because Rankin had just done his fundamentals or whatever. And then he was just sat in the back of his pickup watching me. I kept shaking his head and touching. I was thinking I was doing good, so I was pedaling through the little thing. He was like, mate, fucking go faster. And I was like, try again. And he'd just be like, not having it. Then he just got on his bike and pedaled off up the road. So I was like, he must have got sick of watching me. So I'm like, messing around. And then he just comes steaming into this gravel car park and does like a 20-foot on the lock stop, feet up drift across the car park, and just parked his bike up and sat down again. And I was just like, that man is a boss. So nice. Rad.
Well, you learnt from the best, right? You had some of the best, well, probably the best riders at the time.
For sure.
But they also knew how to party and have fun, right? It must have been an amazing thing to be part of.
It was, without a doubt. The syndicate kept it real. There was a lot of downhill, I think, progressively got more serious throughout my career. But the syndicate always kept it real.
Yeah.
They're a good crew.
Yeah. And you must have had offers from other people that weren't the syndicate, right, throughout, I guess, especially as the results were progressing. Were you ever tempted?
Not really at all. I think there was one point in 2010, I think, or 9, when we'd just released the carbon bike, and the large was too big for me.
Right.
And the medium was too small, and the gap between them was like 20 mil or something. It was quite a big. And I remember just having a nightmare of a season. I didn't qualify for my first World Cup ever at Champery. I was 81st.
Whoa.
And it hurt so bad, and I was just like, oh, this sucks. But I had to wait till I got a good result, and then I emailed Rob. I was like, it's back too fucking big, mate. So then they ended up making a new one for the year after, which fit, and I was absolutely buzzing. But that was complete off on a tangent, and I can't remember what
you
asked.
So, were you tempted to move to a different team?
Yeah, no, not at all. Like... But I was just super disheartened, because I was like, I was thinking more about stopping racing, I think.
Right.
Because I was having a real bad run, and I was a little stroppy fucker. I was like, but no. Santa Cruz have been good to me.
Yeah, for sure.
They've been so good to me.
Yeah.
I feel a strong loyalty, even though they've sold out to a corporation.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a shame, but in the grand scheme of things, that's the way a lot of businesses go, isn't it? And now the marketing manager, Will Ockleton's left.
Yeah.
I deal with Alan Cook.
Right.
Who... he's like a fucking brother. He's honestly such a top lad. So now he totally understands where I'm coming from and what I want to do, and just makes it so I can do what I want to do. So I've got so much respect for him. Yeah. He's a fucking legend.
Nice. Yeah. So the results started to come, like you were kind of working your way up through the elite men's field and top 10s, top 5s, but like that kind of top spot, the top 3 was kind of elusive for a while. And then something happened, right? Like you turned up in 2014 and suddenly like things clicked. Like,
Do you
know what happened? Do you have a feel for any changes or?
The strangest thing was it didn't feel any different.
Right.
Like I was just doing the same thing I'd done
my
whole career, but it just felt easier. And I was doing better. It was mad, mate.
Weird.
Just a total coming of age, I think.
Right.
You know, the 1,000 hours thing or whatever it is. But like, I've practiced this that much. And I think as well, I'd been training with DC at that point. Dan Critchlow from Bergtech.
Okay, yeah.
I think it was like the end. It was like the third or fourth year I'd been training with him.
Right.
So my my body got used to what we were doing, and I had started to build strength, and my fitness was slowly coming in. Yeah, I don't know, just an aligning of a lot of stuff.
Yeah, just a progression of everything, like
big time.
Yeah, were you feeling more like calm and confident at the races, like, or were you still putting pressure?
I'd say so. Also, another thing I had been doing, which was a massive one for me, I totally forgot about this, but is seeing a sports psychologist from Sheffield Hallam Uni. And it's a guy who helped Steve win world champs in Canberra.
Yeah.
And Rob Copeland is called, and he's an absolute geezer. And he kept it real simple with me. Because I think you can go as deep as you want in with that psychology stuff, but for a simple bloke, you got to keep it simple. So I think that the years of practice of that and my training and all of it just seemed to all come together.
What sort of stuff was he doing with you then? I'm fascinated by that side of things.
The principles were really just like stick in the green zone. So if you envision your mental state as like a rev counter or a fuel gauge, you got your blue zone where you're yawning and you're not quite... You got your red zone where your heart...
Yeah, you're going.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and you know, your red zone's usually like a try super hard and blow out a turn.
Yeah.
And your blue zone's like you're breaking in turns because you're not... And it's just finding that you got... If you got your head in the right place on the start, then you've got half a chance, haven't you?
Interesting.
So, yeah, that was a big thing, really.
Did he give you any, like, techniques or tools to help that?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah. A lot of it to do with breathing or, like, thinking of the process rather than the outcome. That was a massive one.
Right.
If you're there thinking, I need to win, I need to win, I need to win, you'd be red zoning. But if you're there thinking, right, I'm going to rail that left, I've got the inside on that right, I've been doing that well all practice, and put yourself in the process, which you know you can do.
Yeah.
So just like, it was super simple, but also super effective.
That's cool.
Helped me a shitload. Yeah. Mental strength that year was a strong point. Typically, it hadn't been.
Yeah.
And I think it was something I had really struggled with coming up, because I'd always been a fast rider and my section speed was always cock on, but putting a run together was just pretty elusive. So
yeah, it always looked like you could win, but you were almost too keen and blowing up.
Yeah, exactly, making silly mistakes and that sort of thing. Yeah. So yeah, that was a massive one.
Interesting. What was the breathing stuff then? Is it literally just like slowing
things down? Just long, slow breath.
Yeah.
If you feel yourself getting too fucking worked up, just get on the long, slow breath. And
nice.
Yeah.
If it works.
Yeah, good.
So how did that season feel then? Because, you know, you've been working, like you said, you're a hungry youth. You're working your way up for a long time, showing ability, but not quite putting it together. And then suddenly it clicks, right?
Yeah.
Leogang, first win?
Leogang.
Not where you'd expect your first victory to be, maybe?
Not at all. Not at all. But I think when I break it down, it was like, it was easier for me there, because the track was so easy and it just seemed like kind of broke my heart, but I was railing so many outsides and there was loads of like gnarly insides and now I was just outside, man. And yeah, it was mad. I didn't expect it. So I'd had a second in Canberra,
right,
which that fired me up. I think that had a real good start to the season for me.
Yeah.
Getting second mile, I was like, right, sick.
This is working.
Yeah. And that win was super unexpected. And did Bruni crash? Or Bruni, when I won, Bruni fucked up somewhere.
I can't remember that one.
But
oh, yeah, maybe in the corner off those drops.
Yeah, down the root bit, did. And I think he would have been right on me. But I just remember my confidence growing. But I also remember we drank so much that year, and I don't know why. And I think it was maybe because the funny thing about the syndicate was like, we always seemed to like, if one of us did shit, the other one would do good. And I seem to remember Greg not having a very good year that year. But so then he was also more on the booze,
right?
And we drank way too much.
Do you think that helped though? Like, is it part of that whole calm, comfortable environment, the fact that you're doing that as well as the racing?
Yeah, I think so. I think it keeps it real. I'm like one of the people who, if everything's going too well, I feel a bit weird. It's almost nice to give yourself a bit of a handicap to work through. I don't know.
Keep life real with a good hangover.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just part of a culture of racing with Petey on the team. That was just what you did. You just sucked booze afterwards. Yeah, it's a nice release, isn't it? It brings everyone together. We had some fun times.
Yeah, so how was the Lear Gang after party then? First win?
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't actually remember. Was it Petey's 100?
Yeah, we've been getting close, I guess.
Yeah. Or was that the year before? I can't even remember. Track. You know what? I can't remember. Like, it must have been good. Because I can't even remember.
And then, like, yeah, the confidence just grew, didn't it? And you could see it in your riding. Like, you looked relaxed.
Yeah.
Like, your whole... You didn't... Like, you looked fast through technical sections and bits where everyone else was pedalling. You'd just be kind of stood up and... I don't know, carrying so much speed. Like, did you change anything with bike setup, or was it literally just...
No, but we did get the 650 bike that year, halfway through.
Yeah.
And I remember that thing felt amazing. And I think it came at a good time.
Yeah.
Because we did Fort Bill, and Greg was analysing results, and we were the only people not on 650 in the top 15.
Right.
And that was the reason we weren't on the podium, because we weren't on 650. And he'd like completely created this whole fucking theory. And then I went and won on 26 the next weekend, which was a fucking classic. But it was definitely a new bike buzz.
Yeah.
Combined with everything else. Yeah.
Came good. And then you had an awesome result in, it was Wyndham, wasn't it? You took the win there as well from Aaron in his home country.
Yeah, yeah.
You looked pretty stoked with that one.
That one felt good, man. That one felt real good. Because St. Anna got second the week before, and that was sort of, for the first time ever, I'd been unhappy with a second.
Fair play.
Which was a different feeling. Yeah. It was like, usually I'd have been so fucking chuffed with a second. I was like, And then, I remember Troy dropping in before me and doing his little handshake. And that just motivated me. Like, wow, me up. I was like, you're getting it, mate. And usually I'm not that guy. I'm usually like, oh my God, I've got to be good. But I remember just, confidence was on another level. It was mad.
It's crazy, isn't it? How that comes together. Like, and then obviously took the overall that year, coming into Worlds, Hafiel. How did you feel? You must have been in a pretty good place.
I was exhausted, man.
Oh, really?
The pressure of the whole season had taken its toll. I had a week after Merivale back here on the boat.
Yeah.
And I just remember being drained. I couldn't, like... I was buzzing, but I was just fucked.
Yeah.
And all week at Norway, I was just, like, couldn't really get myself up for it.
Right.
I was like, I was going through the motions and I was riding well and everything was there, but mentally, I just wasn't like, I don't know. I just wasn't fully there.
Yeah.
Although everything was set and I I totally overlooked the bridge because I wasn't like racing that bit. I was just trying to do fucking tricks on the bridge every run.
Yeah.
So I hadn't even hit the bridge fast once, so... It just shows I was sort of slightly... I wasn't on my game.
Yeah, you weren't there. You weren't there to race, basically.
No,
you were just
taking
part.
Exactly. And then when I did my foot in the race, I remember thinking... It was such a turning point. I remember thinking, winning... I'd rather just not have a medal than have a broken foot, which was weird. But the transition had already started from like really wanting it to just like getting that win in Merivale, getting the overall win, and then realizing you can fucking invest so fucking heavily into like this thing, and then you get this thing, and then you're still just you at the end of the day, ultimately. You're still the same person, nothing like there's. 3 or 4 days when your phone's blowing up, everyone's like, oh, yeah. And then Matt goes and you're just you again and you're no further enlightened or anything.
Yeah, it's
you're
not like life is completed, is
no,
it?
No,
like,
not at all. Not at all. So, yeah, it was funny. Funny the way it panned out. But
so, so you'd already started to feel different coming into Norway then? Like,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Mad. So I think you're still probably the best ever result at World Champs with a broken body, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Like how, must have been a pretty insane like feeling, you know, not, like did you realise you'd where you'd come?
Yeah, and I didn't give a fuck. Right. I was like bothered. They're like, do you want to be on the podium? I was like, get my foot fixed. Like, right. I want to be out of here. I've just totally just like separated myself from it. It was mad.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's mad.
Well, and when you're in pain as well, like the chemicals in your body are different and you feel it's a really different place to be when you're badly hurt, isn't it?
Totally.
Strange. Yeah, that's super interesting. So you're sat in hospital, getting your foot fixed, sorting all that kind of stuff out. What's going on in your mind then? Are you starting to doubt, like, downhill or?
Well, I think, fortunately, that the sort of the infrastructure around me and mid-season I think I'd already signed, I'd renegotiated my contracts, so I was locked into a deal for a few more years.
Right. Yeah.
And obviously number one priority is get the foot fixed.
Yeah.
And then here comes the season, am I going to be ready? And I just found myself rolling into another year.
Yeah, caught in the...
Yeah, but between that, there was definitely a lot of time sat on this boat where I think I sort of just started thinking more about the world than myself and my racing.
Yeah.
And my awareness grew a lot in that little period of recovery.
Yeah.
To like being the fastest and looking out for yourself as much as you can, was way more than that. So, I don't know. It was definitely, I was in some sort of transition.
Yeah.
It was like, but the season gave me something to focus on and something to come back for and get my foot better for, which was a long, hard road, man. That was like...
It was a nasty injury, right?
You
just pretty much smashed it.
Yeah, it was like 8 breaks, 8 dislocations and a load of other... snap ligaments.
Oh man,
it was a mess.
Yeah,
and it still is a funny shape for
right.
And it hurts in the morning.
Really?
Yeah, every morning it's like stiff. So I compensate on my other leg, and my miscalf's massive from limping, and this one don't get worked as much. So it's like definitely some long lasting effects.
Yeah, still feeling the effects.
Yeah, you know, nothing like it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not a bad. It's not
you
bad.
You can still ride pretty well. Off.
Yeah,
so,
it doesn't affect my riding. Yeah. I can run.
Yeah.
I love to run. I was worried I wouldn't be able to run, but I got running again, which was sick.
That's good. Yeah. Was there anything in this like transition that you talk about? Was there anything you kind of read or heard that's you know started those thoughts? Is there anything that stands out like I read a specific book and it made me feel a bit different about stuff? Or
yeah, what was I reading at the time? There's a lot going on at the time, so my memory's not that great. I think it was more, I don't know. What was that? I can't even remember. Might have been about when I read Yvonne Chouinard's book, The Patagonia Boat.
That's like, let our people surf.
Yeah. Just basically more about the planet, caring more about the planet than your personal sort of goals or achievements.
Yeah.
Or trying to combine both, you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Did you almost sense that you started to feel a bit guilty about the...
Yeah.
That self, kind of, focus on yourself and your performance and
no
kind
doubt.
Of nothing else, which you have to be at that level, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. It's real hard to balance. I feel like there's a lot of the... people I've been close to who have been successful. Pete is a one-off. Pete is a sharer. Like, he's a grafter, but he's a sharer.
Yeah.
And he is a super generous guy, and I've got nothing but respect for giving the giving that this what I've received from him, man, which has been such a good example and helped me to sort of have a bit of that about me as well. But yeah, I think to be successful, you've got to be real selfish lot of respects, because you've got to say no to a lot of stuff and you've got to look out for yourself first. And if we had a nation of people who did that, there'd be not a lot of people getting on or doing good stuff. So
yeah,
good job it's reserved for the athletes to be like that, isn't it?
So good. So what point during that season then did you start to realise that maybe it was time for you to get out of the downhill side of things? Like, because your results, it was a slow start, I guess, getting your foot back sorted, but then you started to get back to the top end again, right?
Yeah. And I think I sort of more had to prove to myself and anyone that I could get quick again after having such a bad one.
Yeah.
Or that I still had it. I don't know. But I remember that year fondly. The first race was super tough in Lourdes because I was still in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
And I hadn't had much bike time at all. But yeah, I had a good year. But it was a one after that. 15, it was 16.
That was your last.
Yeah, when I got I did the first race. In time qualifying, I was hauling. Time practice, I was hauling. Yeah. And qualifying, I'd like, my first split was like fifth, and then I crashed, and then I was like 20th. And then Ross Scott was texting Kathy, just like, feed them fucking dog food. Like, super aggressive, because we weren't doing well.
Yeah.
It's like, we're trying our best, mate. Like, we're honestly not tossing it off. And then I got to Fort Bill, and my mindset had just switched, and I was like, it was a real fast, rough year and dry and skatey. And I think I nailed myself twice in practice trying to do whips and like not getting it back. But I was just like scared of a track.
Right.
I was scared of a track. And I come home and I said to my dad, I was like, Dad, I really didn't enjoy it. I was like, I was at the top of my run and I didn't want to race. It was weird. And Dad just starts laughing at me. And he's like, ha, you think you're fucking suffering, don't you, you spoiled little fucker? And I'm like, yeah, that's the point. Like, it is me, I don't want to race. How many people would die for that opportunity?
Yeah.
And then, but I just sort of, I took it all on board and sort of tried to start making plans to how, I don't know, I'm still competitive.
Yeah.
But my World Cup race head, It had gone. So I was like, the team is so good and so focused and supportive, and all these people, fans, fucking anyone who gets in touch and like says good luck, and all these people want it so much for me, and I don't even want it, and it felt dishonest. I was like, I need to get out of this because I'm kidding everyone. Like, yeah. I don't want to win. And they all want me to win. And this is fucking weird. I need to stop this. You know what I mean? Play.
That must have been really hard, though, because, like you say, you've got so many, you know, thousands of people, money, companies behind you.
Infrastructure. Yeah. We're travelling around the world to go and do something. You know? Yeah.
Were you scared of it? Like, because it's a big decision, right? Or did it just feel...
I was sort of in a place where I felt like everything would work out just fine, whatever happened.
Yeah.
But then when it came to like the negotiating, that was the scary bit, because Santa Cruz initially didn't know what to think, and I think they thought I was just gonna come on my boat and fucking never do anything again. So they were worried they were gonna lose me completely,
right,
and didn't know what to do regards salary, and it all got a little bit crazy for a few months, but basically it wasn't scary. It all played out perfect.
Yeah.
And the tough thing is I always struggle with the feeling like I've disappointed people, because there is a lot of people who still write on my Instagram or message me, when are you coming back to World Cup? We miss you, we need you, blah, blah, blah. And that's like real hard for me, because I'm like, I'd love to give you that, but it's just not there. So
yeah, you've got to be happy, right? You're only on this planet for a short period of time, really. So you've got to do what's right.
That thing, yeah. It's like what I've learned over the years, maybe sometimes you do just have to be a little bit selfish in some areas. So fuck it.
Yeah.
It's picking your time, isn't it? It's picking your time.
But you're going to be a better person on this planet if you're happy, right?
Exactly.
It's got to be worth it. I guess people are... yeah, I get it. I understand why people are sad to see you go from downhill, but we still see you, right? You're still riding a bike.
Yeah.
Still getting creative. Yeah. There's still plenty of stuff out there.
Absolutely.
Do you ever look back and... I mean, are there any regrets? Like, do you ever miss the downhill side?
I miss the people. Yeah. There's a lot of people who I wish I saw more regularly, but at the same time, there's a load of people now I see more regularly than I did. Yeah. So it swings and roundabouts, isn't it? You trade a bit for you trade a little bit of something for a bit of something else, and generally the mountain bike community is pretty rad. Yeah. And the enduro scene, which is what I've been dipping into, is quite different and totally lovable because it's new. And I feel I'm getting more out of that than I ever did downhill, really, just because I ride for 5 hours for 3 days rather than five runs for 3 days. I'm fitter, seeing new places, and
Yeah, tell us
so
a bit.
when I look at it like that, I don't miss it at all. But I still absolutely buzz off the times I had. So
yeah, you've been at the top.
Yeah,
which was good. Had the experience, but
yeah, I know. You know, the parties, the friends, hanging out with Brooke. I miss Brookie. And Bruni. Bruni's such a genuine dude. And there's countless people. I'm lucky to still see a few of them.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. So how is the enduro scene treating you then? Everyone I've ever spoken to that's involved in it seems to love it. Like it's like a family, right? Well, not that downhill isn't, but it's you're together riding.
The vibe's different.
Yeah.
You can get in a gondola with someone at Fort Bill and be sat opposite each other with your headphones on for 5 minutes staring at the floor thinking about your lines because it's that intense and you're all that stressed and it's some fucking gnarly situation. And then you go to an EWS and you ride around with a dude for 5 hours and you talk about everything and you get to know everything. I'm just buzzing to make it round, you know what I mean? So the sense of achievement of doing a day is big and nice, and it's like... It's a day out on my bikes with a bit of a community, and it's just closer to that, what we were talking about earlier. It's what we're about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just a little bit closer
having
to
an
that.
Adventure. And yeah, we were talking before we pressed record, we were talking about, I was saying for me, I think I got into riding, I rode bikes as a way of having adventures. I didn't ride bikes for bike's sake, and then the bike sort of took over and I lost to some extent the adventure side.
Yeah.
And I think what you guys do with 50 to 1 and what enduro does as a sport, I guess, is starts to bring some of that adventure back
totally, mate.
Yeah. It's super, it's cool.
It's just rootsy. It's like, it is, it's fucking, it's nice, man.
And but it still manages to blend that with a competitive element, right? And you say you still got an element of competitiveness about you. Like, do you have goals for EWS, or is it just a case of going along and enjoying it?
I usually just sort of roll up and then we'll practice and I'll be like, that stage I've got no chance because it's got a climb of 2 minutes in it, but that one on the other hand I'll have a good do at him,
right?
And then just sort of play it like that.
Some stages you ride and some stages you race almost.
And I try and race them all, but honestly I can't get my head around how Sam does it on flats. It is fucking mental because he is a strong lad. But I feel like it took me however many years to get good at downhill.
Yeah.
If I've committed to enduro it, it'd probably be similar because there's so much to learn, because you've got to be like, not only are you double hanging than downhill, you're on a lesser bike and you've got to make it last. So there's so many elements to it. But then again, the places you find yourself in when you're that tired and you're like using your intuition and you don't really know what's around the next corner, but you can kind of feel what's coming because you've read the terrain, and it's pure, man. It's fucking pure. It's nice.
And you've had some you have a second to Sam in, was it Colombia?
Yeah.
On one of the stages?
Yeah, yeah.
So you could, yeah, you could probably take it.
I feel my track speed is as good as anyone's. I'm still quite confident. I feel like my riding's as good now as it's ever been.
Right.
But with 50-1 and the filming, my training isn't as committed as it could be.
Right.
So I think I do. And I haven't been in the gym. I was thinking about this. I haven't been in the gym since the winter of 15, maybe. I don't even know if I went in for last year down. So I'm a while out of the gym. I've right. just been doing yoga. And with the long pedaling,
yeah.
my physiology has changed so much, man.
Interesting.
Like, I can spin for hours. Like yeah. My endurance has massively improved.
Right.
But to have that fast, that sprint in you as well, you know what I mean? You need to work hard for that because it's two hard things to gain at the same time.
Like, yeah.
You've got to put the gym hours in, which I haven't been, but I've been justifying it by filming, so it's one of them. I love it. It's all good.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'll take my little stages. And there's part of me wants to commit to a season of Enduro because I think it would be rad. But then I've got it so good at the moment and there's such a variety, and I'm just dipping in, like not doing a full series probably makes me enjoy it way more when I do it. Yeah. So we'll see where it ends up, but yeah.
So is there a little bit, sounds like there's a little bit of hunger still there for some kind of outlet of that competitive yeah. side?
But then, yeah, totally there is. But old habits die hard. And when I was in Chile, I nailed myself. And I'd like, it was the first day in the three stages. And stage one, I did 13 for summit and I felt super chilled, and stage two had a crash and it was 17. It was a mega long,
that was like the 20 plus minute. Yeah,
and then we had like an 800 meter climb up this tarmac road in the sweltering heat
at altitude as well,
and then the last stage of the day, and then Alan at lunch, Alan was like, yeah, you're doing good, you're like top 15. So I was like, that little fucking man in my head was like, come on, you've got this. And then the competitiveness brought on a big slam, and I slammed so hard and I whacked my head and I was laying in the dirt. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to move. It's so nice just being here on the floor. And the race didn't matter. And it was kind of a little, I don't know. I never know what to read from the messages that come, but it felt like something were going on. Don't get too caught up. I don't know. It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah, was the universe telling you to just chill out a bit?
Chill out, yeah.
Yeah.
So, fuck knows. Fuck knows.
For me, I love it, because every time I see a photo from you at EWS, there's just a massive grin on your face. And if that sums it up, like, that's what riding bikes is all about, and having fun and getting loose and enjoying it.
And when you separate yourself from that competitive eagerness, you can enjoy it just that little bit more.
Yeah.
And you never know if that brings out better in you anyway, because you're not tight, and so it's all a balance, isn't it? But
yeah, so yeah, for sure. And it's nice that you can go to an event like that and have a good time as a rider, and still, like, you get your results at the end of it, so you can have that competitive thing if you want, or you can just go for the enjoyment. And
well, and the great thing for me is, like, I get the events like that are where all the media is. So me, Luce is on it. Luce goes and finds a stump to foot plant and does his things and gets as much coverage as any fucking leading dude. And it's like, and he's doing it with a big grin, and then I get to see a load of fans too, and it's nice, man. It is nice.
Yeah, we were talking briefly before we hit record about that almost fame, I guess. So it's, you know, the mountain bike world is still a small world, but you're a recognisable guy. You don't kind of blend into the crowd. What's it like when people are kind of, you know, they recognise you, they want to speak to you, or they want a selfie or whatever? Like, how's that feel? It must be weird.
Yeah, it depends on the environment. It's like, if I'm at a race or if I'm somewhere, I'm usually half expecting it, and it sounds, but it's like the normal day stuff when someone spots me. And some people just like, the other thing is, what's mad, I was having a guy in the co-op before I've come in here, he was like, "Hey, Rat, how are you doing?" And just literally, like, we'd known each other 10 years. And Rat was wicked because we just chatted and vibed it out and it was fun.
Sweet.
But then other times, I'm like feeling shy and I don't know who they are and it's all nervous. And I just get super weird and it's just like, what is going on? And it's a trip, sure. Something like I said, I never get used to. But.
And in Colombia, pretty full on, right? The crowds are insane.
Oh, my word. Chile seemed mad. We thought Chile was busy because it was like probably an hour from Santiago, and Santiago was massive.
Yeah.
But in Manizales, we were literally like in the city. Like the urban race was in the city, and the stage was like 10 minutes up the road. So, okay. And the population was even bigger there, it seemed. So, but rad to see biking so healthy. But like, I was washing my bike, just people grabbing me and selfieing and just like, it was fucking nuts. I was like jet washing them off and like carrying on and then more and coming. It was just fucking bonkers, man. It was absolutely bonkers. But
you're saying you almost missed the stage start because you were like having to chat to everyone and get photos and...
Yeah.
It's crazy.
They have no sort of perception of where you're at in your day or what's going on. They're just like, homing on you, and you're just like, fuck, just like, I can't tell them I'm late and fuck them off, I've just got to do it. And then there's more rolling in, it just gets crazy.
It's cool. Well, you're probably one of, well, you could well be the most recognisable mountain biker on the planet, I guess. Like, it's probably between you and Petey, right, these days?
I've no idea, but Sam was... Sam was having a bit of trouble with it as well.
Really?
Not trouble, but he was fucking struggling because Sam's a super quiet guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's pretty chilled.
So I think he was having a hard time with it as well, which just makes me laugh.
Yeah, added pressure on a race weekend. Like, maybe you don't need it when you've got, like, obviously he's focused on the series overall.
Big time.
That's a lot of added pressure, having people wanting a piece of you.
Well, that 800 metre climb I talked about in Chile was the one, it's the main road to the resort from the city.
Right.
And whilst he was pedalling up that, people were rolling in and Mark was near him. And Mark was like, there wasn't a car that went past who didn't scream his name. And the road was busy.
Yeah.
And I was just, but at the same time, all that energy has got to put him in a good spot, like for,
yeah,
I don't know, the support of it all. And
yeah, you get must buzz off it, like crowd and all, people shouting your name and that. Yeah. So talking about crowds, Steel City Downhill last weekend, awesome turnout, sun was out. What is Petey doing? Has he got some jazzy French lines up there? He still managed to smoke you boys, like...
Do you know what? This year, I'd actually counted him out. Like, last year, he didn't win, did he? And I was like, that's it. Petey's old, he's done. And then he fucking had two fat elbows as well.
Yeah, he's in hospital this week getting some infection in his elbow sorted, right?
So he was already in the thick of that. He said the night before he didn't sleep because he was sweating because he was full of that infection.
Jeez.
And I was just like, yeah, Petey's got no chance. And then off he goes and just... He did one practice run as well. He did one practice run.
Any idea how he's doing it? Like, because it wasn't just by a little bit. Like, he had a good chunk on a track that's just over a minute.
I've no idea how he does it. Sheer grit and determination, yeah.
It's impressive, isn't it?
Very.
Because you were, like, you looked focused, certainly on your second run. Like, you were pushing on.
The weird thing was, my first run, I was chilling. Second run, I tried so hard. And I think I went slower.
Oh, really?
So it's one of them tracks. It's hard to know what's quick and what's not. And he just like a fucking pump track. Knows. Yeah, it's full pumpy.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it's as if he's got like a secret line that they open up when he comes down for his run.
Mad.
Amazing.
Mad.
Cool. But yeah, great event, right? Like, super good fun.
I really enjoy that event. It's sick.
Yeah.
It's, and I didn't even go there. I struggle with them little races. I struggle to get my race head on a little bit because I'm just enjoying the whole thing too much.
Yeah.
I just think it's rad how many people it brings out. And
yeah, like 3,000 in the crowd or something like that. Insane. Yeah, cool. And you've got there's a new film out this week, 9 to 5, covering like the Santa Cruz Enduro crew. at the first couple of rounds of EWS, Alex Rankin, that most of us that are my age remember, like the Sprung videos from back in the day. It was super cool to see that kind of, you know, that race and lifestyle and scene thing coming back and some awesome tunes. Tell us a bit about like how that all came together, because it's through Fabric, right?
Yeah, yeah. Fabric, Nick Larson. I don't know how to explain him really, but he's got his finger on the pulse. He just seems to know what's good and what's not. And he, where did he send Rankin with us first? Oh, we did the edit down at Windhill.
Oh, yeah. Back,
yeah, a few months ago. And it was a buzz just to be out with Rankin again. So when Alex messaged me saying there might be a chance I could come out, so I hit Alan up straight away. And I said to Alan, Rankin wants to come out. What's the crack? Is there any room? Have you already booked? Or is there a spare bed? Or, and Alan just replied, we'll make it work. And I was just like, yes. Exactly. So like, don't matter, we'll make it work. And as it happened, the accommodation in Chile was super tight anyway. But just, Rankin's a fucking legend, man. He's a fun guy to have around. And I've so much respect for his work. Watching him edit and seeing how, even when he thinks he's fucked up, he's like, oh yeah, I was on my way up here, but then you guys came, and then he's still just, I don't know, he's got that experience, hasn't he? It's yeah, like, yeah. He knows what he's doing. And he kept sending me drafts of the film before it come out, and I never really had any input for him other than how much I loved it. He was like trying to bounce it off me to see if there's anything he could improve. I'm just like, mate, it's sick. So yeah, he's,
yeah, because you're listed as co-producer on the outro of that video, right?
He did text me saying my co-producer. That's fucking hilarious. Well, I think he just uses me as like, he was putting them tunes on it, and he's sending them tunes, and he's like, is that tune, we can't really use that tune, can we? I'm like, yes, we've got to use that tune, it's fucking sick.
He has got amazing taste in tunes on videos, like, he's always been bang on.
He nails it, doesn't he? He so fucking good. Nails it. But he's, he's a fucking legend. He's a super funny guy.
And is there more of that coming then? Is that going to be like a little series?
Yeah, we're going to try and do a series. I've been talking to Nick about it over the last few days, and it's still, Alex was going to go to the EWS this weekend, but we want to do it more of like, the beauty of it was like the characters on it, like us all talking about each other. And
yeah, that was really nice.
It's like a bit of a behind the scenes feel, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And so what we want to try and do is take different characters to different events and do a similar thing.
Nice.
So we'll take, anyone under the Fabric name. And Nick was basically like, if there's someone you buzz off and you think they'll be good, we'll just give them as many seats as they want and get them to come. I'm like, fucking sick.
Sweet. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, so there's definitely some fun times ahead.
Nice. So it doesn't just have to be EWS focused. It could be other events.
No, and that's the thing. I think we're going to try and do one at the Mega. We did the Mega for the first time last year, and that week is something else.
Special time, isn't it? Yeah.
So I think that'll be the next one, hopefully, the Mega.
Cool.
And then what else was we talking about?
Yeah, what other events are you doing this year then? So you're going to do a few of the EWSs?
Yeah, I've got, there's one before the Mega. The Austria one.
Oh, yeah.
The Austria one, and then the Mega, and then La Tuile.
Yep.
And then I might try and get to Hookfest, which is Macken's Norway Fest series, because we did that Loose Fest last year, and that was such a buzz, man.
That's some ridiculous stuff, right? Did you go with Craig?
Yeah.
Yeah. How was it then? Go on, tell us a bit about that.
Man, that was the scariest. I had to get pissed the night before to get to sleep.
Fair dues.
I was like, oh no, I'm not having a sleepless night here. I need a nightcap or something to put me out. Because we got there, man, and you see, like, There's a load of bike parky stuff in the zone, and there's like tabletops. There's like a 20-foot tabletop here. And then behind it, there's just a mountain of landing looming. And then the takeoff so far away, it's just like, oh. So, yeah, it was a new experience. It was extremely scary, but extremely rewarding. I've not felt that sort of rush off bikes for a while.
Who led you in? Did someone drag you in first run?
No, you don't sort of follow because it's a bit gnarly.
Okay.
You sort of do trains once you're comfortable with them.
Okay.
But someone just sort of says, they're so well built, man. Nico Vink is a wizard. You don't even need to hit it with a shovel. The way they get him and his mate, what's his mate called? Christoph.
Mm-hmm.
The finish they get is like shiny with the bucket of a digger. They're like,
right. So it's all machine built.
Yeah. And basically, I had to drop in, brake a little bit, do like a couple of shark fins braking, and then if you got that like step down out the berm to the top of a landing, if you landed good at the top, you just had to commit and that you were in. And then I found out that I had to pull off it, and like you're hitting that takeoff probably as fast as you've been on a bike. You know what I mean? Like, imagine bombing some mad shit in the Alps somewhere. Like, remember just being a lit.
Like Monsonan kind of speed. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Jeez. It's crazy. So, yeah, it was absolutely nuts. But super well built.
Yeah.
Did one. Kate, like, lily pad. The lily pads are, like, probably 10 foot long.
Right.
Like, they're like that and then like that, aren't
okay.
They?
So you got a nice
get-out-of-jail-free
exactly,
card. Exactly. So pulling to get to that, then speed tucking, then pulling again, and it's just insane. It's absolutely
nice.
Insane.
And it must be in the air for like a good few seconds. Yeah, right? I even feel like
long
you're floating
enough to know
for a
while. About it. You're up there.
Yeah,
and you kind of got to take off front wheel up because it is that long in the air. If you come off a lip like level,
yeah.
By the time you get to the landing, your nose heavy.
Okay.
So you have got a lift front wheel high, and then it slowly balances out. It's a different feeling, man. It's crazy.
It's insane.
Crazy.
Yeah. So you're going to come back to one of those events then?
Yeah, so fancy another one of them. Because that was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And then, what else? Whistler.
For Crankworks.
Yeah. Oh, and doing Leger Crankworks as well. Nice.
You're going to race down at those as well?
Yeah. Going to do down. Only Leger.
Yeah.
Not at Whistler.
Yeah.
Just do the Enduro at Whistler and whip off and stuff.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's two downhills at Leger this year. There's two last year. I had a third at one of them last year for Greg. Greg was second, but he was stinking hungover and I tried real hard and he beat me. I was like, you fucker.
He was having a pretty good season, though, to be fair, wasn't he? He was in a good place.
He was. He was riding high, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So you're still watching the downhill then, like?
Funny, last year I sort of didn't really. I felt weird about it, but I couldn't wait to watch Lozenge.
Yeah.
I felt like it's nice being on this side of it. I didn't really.
It's a good sport as a spectator these days, like with all the Red Bull coverage. And
I know, the coverage is sick.
Yeah, it is real good.
The track looked gnarly. I didn't envy them.
No, that looked hard work.
It did look hard work. Yeah. A sprint into the technical and then more sprinting.
Yeah, it's about as hard as it gets, I reckon, physically, like, pretty horrible.
I heard mixed report as well, because Petey was buzzing off the track. Petey was like, fucking old school, mint. Yeah, I loved it. Brendan was like, fucking horrible. so I was like, all right.
Split people a bit.
Yeah.
That was interesting. So who's your money on for the season then? You got Phil, men's and women's?
I thought Jack Moore would be further up. What happened to him?
They had a good. They all qualified pretty well, didn't they?
Yeah, because I watch his videos online and I think, wowie,
is insane.
He's like his relaxedness at the pace he's moving at is ridiculous.
Yeah, he put something on Instagram this week that literally blew my mind. Like the speed he was carrying just looked
and,
so
and
scary.
Just the shapes and the.
Yeah,
keen on him. Absolutely keen on him as a rider. I think he's a sound guy as well. And then Brooko.
Yeah.
I want Brook to do real well, and I feel like we're seeing a different Brook.
Yeah, for sure.
He's, like, you usually, if the tapes are here, he's bouncing off the left, bouncing off the right, fucking tucking the front, getting it back up, and then off the left again, and then into the turn. But he was just looking precise and refined, wasn't he?
Yeah, for a course where you'd imagine him to be trying to break the course, he looked so smooth.
Totally.
Yeah.
Just felt like he was so unfortunate getting caught out by that scrub. It looked like something hooked.
Yeah, I couldn't tell.
Hooked
his
back
really.
Wheel and dumped him in or something. But hopefully he's healed up for Fort Bill.
Yeah, looks like he's got some form.
Yeah. Cracked me up how he rode down and was waving to the fans with a bus collarbone. It's just like, you're a fucking animal.
Yeah, because he'd been down trackside for a while, and he's clearly hurt. Like, yeah. That was a fair effort getting down, especially getting down that track as well. Like, it's not like rolling down a fire road, is it?
Yeah, he's a fucking nutter, isn't
he? No, that'd be good to see how he goes at Fort Bill in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, Danny's on a new bike, isn't he?
Yeah, see how he gets on with that.
Obviously, like to see the Syndicate boys do well. Pump for Luca.
Yeah,
that
man.
Was sick.
That was
so
really cool.
There'll be more of that coming.
Yeah. Happy days. Yeah, there's so many people that can win, eh? Like, it's exciting times.
Yeah, it's stacked, isn't it? It's stacked field, man.
Yeah, it'd be hard to compete. Like, top 15 is, well, maybe more. Like,
yeah.
It's 15 riders that could win, probably.
Totally, totally.
Yeah. What about in the women's then? Have you got a feel for that one? Like,
I must be honest, I've not really paid a great deal of attention to it, but... Did Rach get beat?
Yeah, Miriam won. And looked amazing as well, like super smooth.
Did she?
Yeah.
Miriam's always had a good start, hasn't she?
Yeah.
I'm sure Tani could do well. So Tani looks like she's going good on a slice of pie and match. She's got a bit of...
Yeah, she's got some style about her.
Yeah, she has.
That's cool.
Seems like she's got way more movement on the bike. Like, a lot of the women seem to get locked into, like, the straight arm thing almost. But Tani's, like, super active. So is Miriam.
Yeah.
And I think that's got to be a good thing.
Moving around on the bike.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we've been chatting for a while. Let's sort of round it out with a couple of little bits. Let's touch on what do you think mountain biking is doing well at the moment? Like, where's the scene at as far as you're concerned?
I think it's doing well in its diversity. I mean... It's growing.
Yeah.
For me, only from what I see, but I guess I see quite a lot events wise and just locally. Like, the riding scene locally is booming, as good as it's ever been. There's trails everywhere, there's people digging everywhere. Can't go to a spot without there being people there.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely sick. And for a time, it was like, I remember when I was racing downhill, it was like, fuck Enduro, they're going to take our money. That was Greg's attitude, like. It's like, but that everything seems to be just finding its own little place and settling in nicely. And I mean, there's room for everyone, isn't there?
Yeah, for sure.
And there's more and more people making a living out of it. And
And Enduro's created some awesome bikes for us to all get around on.
Oh, word, hasn't it just? Yeah. The thing, like, that eye tower, when I go uplifting now, I'd take that. I'm just like, it's just smashing into
everything.
But I can pedal it just as comfortably. Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane.
Bike of dreams, man. It's sick. So, but yeah, what's it doing well? Everything just... I guess with growth comes vloggers and stuff like that. But like I said, I'm sure there's room for everyone. And
There's been a bit of bad press, I guess. Some of the racers sort of... Not that happy about marketing dollars going to what people sort of term lifestyle athletes. But to an extent, I guess that's kind of what you're almost a lifestyle athlete, right? You're not going to races for the result. You're not going for the win. Maybe you're going for the stage here and there. But you're, you know, getting a salary because you're doing great stuff in biking and people buzz off it and that sells product. Like, how do you feel about that? Kind of that tension between, you know, dollars going to racing versus dollars going to people just riding bikes and doing good stuff.
It's really tough, man. I feel like, number one, I mean, be true to yourself. getting where you fit in, do your thing, and if that's means you can earn a living, that's fucking great for you. And if not, it's probably gonna cause a bit of bitterness for people who are, who maybe feel don't deserve it. But yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? And I also know that there's beyond racers, like a load of guys local to me, the Hockenalls, for instance. I mean, you may get three free frames or whatever the idea is, and fucking Sam or Dave, whatever you want to call him, Hockenall, is one of the most talented bike riders I have ever fucking witnessed. So, I mean, I just don't think we should ever be any tension. If someone's doing something you're not happy with, stop focusing on them and do better at what you do, innit? It's,
yeah, fair comment, I think.
Yeah.
And it's cool that, and I guess it's social media that enables it, but you can now, you don't have to race to be part of the scene and to get money and kit to do it, right?
And I think that is ultimately a wicked thing, because obviously it depends what level you're racing at and what level of racing you're doing, but and there's no doubt some serious camaraderie between a lot of the downhill racers, but there's also a lot of them who don't have that camaraderie,
right,
and they see it as they're racing them.
Yeah.
And there's this fucking clear divide in someone who you're racing and a friend.
Right.
And I've had that, and I felt it, and I won't name names, but I'm sure people could connect the dots. And it's like, you know, fuck any of that grief between us when...
Yeah.
What, you know, it's a load of bollocks. So I think if as good as racing is for bringing out the best in people's performance, I think it can be bad for turning people against each other through for no reason. Like, not that it turns people against each other. Well, it, you know what I mean?
It seems to, even though you're racing the clock, it does seem to. Yeah,
it can have that effect on the wrong people.
Yeah,
no doubt. Cool. So
interesting.
Yeah,
but yeah, mountain biking feels like it's in a. In a real good place. Anything you would change about them, the mountain bike world these days, if you could fix a few things?
I think punctures wouldn't be a thing. And I also think the forces that be of SRAM and Shimano would fucking just stop being such greedy fuckers and invest in gearbox. Or gear hubs.
Okay.
Because why on earth we're still strapping a $200, $300, $500 whatever dollar piece of technology to the lowest, rearest point of our bikes absolutely baffles me.
Yeah.
To no end. Like, well, it doesn't baffle me because I know they're all making mad money off it, but I can't believe we as the people of, I don't know, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's true, actually. That,
just to be more, just if the industry as a whole could be more aware of the planet and the effect we have on it, because ultimately, if we didn't have the beautiful planet to ride our bikes on, we'd be fucked. We wouldn't have anywhere to do it. Obviously, we'd all be dead, but... Like, you're packaging, you buy something and it comes wrapped in a plastic bag and another plastic coat on a cardboard thing and just all those little things like that, probably.
Yeah.
Just try and green it up a bit.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of companies trying to go that way.
Yeah, there's
which
a few,
is ace, but
there's a
just,
few good ones out there
just
for sure.
Fast forward it a little bit. Just just hit a button and fast forward to mad eco green companies. That'd
nice.
Be sick.
Yeah, it's not a lot of it in the bike world, I guess. Like, there's a lot of people are moving in that direction. Certainly in my group of friends, like, a lot of people are reducing plastic and shopping more locally and trying to buy veg that's not in like 15 different foil things and all
for
that
sure.
jazz. But yeah, there's not much in the bike side of stuff, I guess.
No, and I think probably a lot of it is because it comes from a country far away where the laws and things and awareness is not there, so
true.
They farm it out, don't they? So,
and it's quite a throwaway thing. Like, if technology's more than a year old, it's like we're moving on,
obsolete.
We're getting something else.
It's trippy, isn't it?
Yeah,
funny how I love keeping on my little bits. I've got like a stack of XTR Max, which I've made one baggy one out of because I've smashed them all to bits and tried to rebuild them. And I get a lot out of that, making one good one out of a load of broken bits. And I don't know, I wish looking people after it. Like that,
but yeah,
I'm sure there's some absolutely dial people out there. But there's also a lot of and repairing tyres. That's something I need to go and get some glue because I put a lot of holes in tyres.
Yeah.
So then you got to fucking try and repair that shit. You can't just let that go.
Can't just chuck it out every time. Yeah. Yeah. Fair play. And 50-1, I guess you guys started that, what, 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah.
You're following similar, like it's all environmentally friendly as much as it can be. And
yeah, yeah.
How's that going? Like, I see a lot of people wearing it, so.
Yeah, it's the response has been great, man. We've had a lot of support and it's a nice feeling because it's something what's close to our hearts. And I feel like in the future we'll have way more time to put into it.
Right.
At present with the racing and the filming, and it's like with all me, Sambo, Luce and Petey. Well, Petey's obviously got his Petey's products, but me, Sambo and Luce especially, I've got like 5 ideas at any one time we want to put into something what we know can be useful and be done better or
okay.
But just having the time and resources to make it happen isn't always there, but
so do you think we'll see you move outside of just clothing and
definitely bits and bobs we'd like on? To be. I mean, we never really wanted to just be a clothing company, but
right.
It's just the guys at Banana are fucking great because they are finger on the pulse in that industry. They know what's going on, so they can guide us through it a lot.
Cool.
So that's good. But and it's sort of a bread and butter. It might give us the opportunity to do more stuff.
Yeah,
like we've never taken money out of 50-1 really, we just put it back in or try and help the boys out with it or
nice
bits and bobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
sweet.
It's good.
So we'll see some interesting products from you guys at some point in the future then.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Watch this space. Cool. We've got 3 questions that we ask all of our guests. So we'll hit those and then I reckon we're done. First one is, if you had £100 or if our listeners had £100 to spend to either improve their performance or have a bit more fun on a bike, what would you recommend they spend it on? We're back into consumerism here, but it doesn't have to be a product. It could be anything.
Maybe some tools.
Mm.
Go and dig a jump, get some sweet air.
Yeah.
It's funny. I find myself only really digging when I've got a project coming up. Last time I did a load of digging was before Wheel Love, and I'm filming next week, so I've been last 3-4 days I've just been in the woods, and the sense of just achievement, and it's just nice just building something what loads of people you know will enjoy in the future. Maybe a spade and a matic and then you're off.
Yeah,
that'd be sick.
Have you got a recommended brand for your spade and matic or
no not
whatever
really. I can't even remember where I got mine from, but yeah, maybe some tools, build some jump.
Just
look after the trails. Sambo.
Yeah.
Got to give Sambo a big shout out. Like, Mac Forrest round us. Riding's insane. Riding scene's growing constantly.
Yeah.
And the trail maintenance is at an all-time low. So it's like, especially the winter, it gets savaged. It just gets so deep.
Yeah, especially this winter as well has been rough, hasn't it?
Like, the amount of times I've come round a corner and it's just the rut's been dug out and it's fresh, and I'm just like, Sambo, you're a king. So, you know, like that's, you got to give a little back. We spend a lot of time just rinsing trails, and it's nice to do a little bit on them, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, like you say, looking after the environment that we ride in, that we're lucky to ride in, really. So,
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and with more and more people coming onto the trails and building trails,
then
they need more people looking after them as well.
Totally.
Instead of taking it for granted.
Totally.
Yeah. Fair play. Question 2. If you could wind back the clock and sit down with your 16-year-old self and give him a bit of advice, what would you tell him?
Oh, man. I have no idea. I have no idea. What would I tell him? I don't know what I'd tell him. That's a hard one, mate. I'd probably advise him to stay clear of particular ex-girlfriend.
Hindsight. Excellent.
Yeah, yeah, everything's worked out all right, but I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes you've got to go through the process to get to where you need to be.
That's
right?
It, innit? That's it. I feel like everything does happen for a reason, and there's a lot of valuable lessons along the way, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, all good. All right, last question. If you could have a coaching day with any rider, past or present, who would it be, why, and what would you want to learn from them? You can pick more than one if you want.
That's it. Probably Rennie.
Really? Go on,
yeah,
why?
Probably Rennie. Just is for the... Looking at his video sections, I feel like he's probably the most rounded, 100% the most rounded rider of his time. I mean, you've got Cedric, who could definitely do the tricks and have the style.
Yeah.
But Rennie was another level. Rennie were doing like flat spin threes before they were even a thing.
Yeah.
Them off axis mad ones you were doing, and like, but big hops on him, just insane cornering. Feel like he's definitely one of the most rounded, sickest riders.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'd just love another session with him.
Nice. Yeah, it's cool that you got to ride with him. Is there anyone who you would love to ride with that you've never had the chance yet? You've been lucky to ride with some pretty rad people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I did a bit of riding with our dog this winter, which was fucking sick. But who would I like to ride with? I don't know. That's a real tough one. Maybe Sevenoak.
You've not had the chance yet.
I did. I rode hardtail around a Nike parking lot with him in like 07 maybe.
Was this when you were on Nike 6.0 or whatever? Yeah.
It took us to Oregon.
Yeah.
To Portland, to the HQ. I took my hardtail on the road. We like went and made a rut and did something, which was sick.
Nice.
But I think
yeah, both proper
come
session.
On a lot since then.
Yeah, for sure. That's a video I'd like to see. Make it happen, man.
Learn something from him.
Yeah.
Sick guy.
Sweet. Cool. Good stuff. Nice one. Great. It's been super interesting chatting, and I feel very chilled on this lovely boat. The sun.
Good.
It's mint. And thanks for having us over. It's cool.
Anytime.
If people want to see what you're up to, where's the best place for them to follow you on socials and stuff?
Ratboy Bryce on Insta, and probably 50to1.
Cool.
On YouTube. I think it's 50to1.tv maybe.
Okay.
Maybe just YouTube 50to1.
I'll check it out. I'll put it in the show notes so that people can find it on the website or whatever. So. Nice one. Well,
thanks.
Best of luck for the rest of the year. Look forward to seeing some more video projects and some EWS grins.
Definitely.
Happy days.
Good to chat, mate.
Nice
Thank
one.
You very much.
Cheers, man.
Okay, that's it for our episode with Josh Briceland. I really hope you enjoyed it. I know I had fun chatting with him. If you did and you've got a couple of minutes, please head over to iTunes and leave us a review. It means a lot. Well, we'll have another great episode for you on the 5th of June, but until then, get out and ride.